You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member. Good football watchers, these passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi made for football watching. And we are back. It is Purple Friday leading up to the Ravens Week 9 matchup against the Indianapolis Colts, and back here with us to answer more mailbag questions as well as get into that preview of the Ravens at Colts game is Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire. Matthew, what a week it's been. How you doing today?
Doing better than a lot of the Ravens, but could certainly be doing better this week.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind, a rough week for Baltimore, starting off with the loss to the Steelers. You have Ronnie Stanley out for the season, Tyree Phillips goes on IR, coronavirus all across the Ravens facility, although, you know, hopefully it's just Marlon Humphrey who has the virus, but seven other guys going on that coronavirus reserve list, so Baltimore hasn't had a lot of their defense at practice this week. Luckily, Matthew Judon was able to return, but the other guys, as long as they pass those tests throughout the rest of the week into Sunday, they'll be able to play and travel with the team and play in the Indianapolis game. But Matthew, kind of diving into the last of our mailbag questions here, according to Elias, he asks, was the loss to the Steelers really that bad? The offense has not played well for a few weeks now, but the defense played solid for most of the Steelers game and the rest of the season so far. Isn't this Ravens football we all knew for years before Lamar Jackson put on a show? The loss of Stanley is devastating, but we've won games without him this year and almost pulled this one out. We're 5-2 with a top 5 defense and run game, but the offense isn't really clicking. We just need to remember how to overcome adversity like all other championship teams. So Matthew, was the loss to Pittsburgh really that bad?
It was and it wasn't. One thing I want to emphasize is that, you know, we've been looking at this team since week 3 and going, they'll eventually get it. They'll eventually get it. The offense will eventually click. The penalties will stop. The turnovers won't happen. We keep saying that week in, week out. At some point, we just have to kind of admit that, like, maybe that's just the way the Ravens are this year. What's really concerning to me was they had a bye week. You have a week to prepare for this game, and you still went out there and put the ball into your opponent's hands 4 times. That's not going to get it done any week. It's not going to get it done against a really good Pittsburgh Steelers team that was and still is undefeated as of right now. And I think it's also important to note the AFC North itself. You know, you're now effectively two and a half games back from the Steelers because of the tiebreaker currently. So that Thanksgiving game is now super important, because not only do you need Pittsburgh to kind of screw it up over the last half of the season, and they've got a very favorable schedule for that matter, you now need to go ahead and beat them on Thanksgiving. Like, you don't have a choice if you want to win the AFC North. Otherwise, you're looking at a wild card spot and, you know, having to go on the road. And Baltimore typically hasn't been as great on the road as they have been at home. So, you know, there's some concern. At the same time, I think a lot of people that are saying, like, the season's over. No, I mean, they are 5-2. Baltimore is very lucky. They have a very favorable schedule this year. They don't play a lot of great teams. They haven't played a lot of great teams so far. So they kind of seem to just be walking into a playoff spot regardless. But where my point of contention is you had the time. If you can't get up for a Pittsburgh Steelers game, you can't do it at all this season. And they had a chance to really kind of cement themselves and fix some of the issues they had. And instead of fixing those issues, they actively got worse in a lot of ways. So concerning, but it's not the end of the season by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, with each win, we can keep going ahead and looking at the next week and going, well, maybe next week's the week that they're going to finally get it together. And that's when we'll see MVP version of Lamar Jackson come out. Until they lose enough to not be in the playoffs, that's just going to have to be good enough for right now.
Yeah, and I think the big thing to take away from the whole thing is that, arguably, without the turnovers, without the penalties, the Ravens win this game by maybe 2-3 scores. But the fact of the matter is that didn't happen. The penalties happened and the turnovers happened. And everything goes the way the ball bounces, and that's how the ball bounced for Baltimore against Pittsburgh. So it's all a matter of if, right? It's if the Ravens can stop the penalties, if the Ravens can stop turning the ball over. We've seen positives throughout this entire season. It's not like Baltimore is a bad football team. They're a good one. They're a good playoff team. You mentioned they're probably getting a playoff spot this year. But it could be a wild card spot just because that Pittsburgh 7-0. They play a relatively easy schedule as well. So we could see Baltimore be a 5 seed with a decently good record going into the playoffs. But Matthew, our next question comes from Steve. And Steve asks, does Tyree Phillips get moved to tackle to be a much needed backup? If not, who is the answer for that role? Now, Phillips is on injured reserve right now with a high ankle sprain. But right now, Baltimore does not have a backup tackle, even on the practice squad with Ronnie Stanley's injury. So, Matthew, what do you predict Baltimore does with that?
that's a great question and one that I wish I had a better answer to. You know, they've seemingly stuck with Tyree Phillips at guard, despite him playing terribly so far this season. So you'd like to think if they had a different guard that was capable of playing better, they would have stuck him in there. At the same time, if they had a better tackle option, they would roll with that instead. So I don't know. It feels almost like as long as Phillips isn't blown out of the water while he's out on injured reserve for the next few weeks, if he does return at all this season, I mean, it seems like it's still kind of his job when he comes back. Again, barring whoever steps in, Patrick McCary is who it looks like. Barring McCary going ahead and playing just outstanding over the next few weeks and really kind of earning that spot, no, I think you need him as a guard, apparently, according to the Ravens. As far as you know, what they might use as or who they might use as an additional tackle, the fact that Baltimore hasn't gone out and made a move yet is a little concerning in its own right. But I wonder how much, you know, some of the isolation from COVID and stuff like that might be impacting them as well when it comes to signing guys or bringing guys in right now. I'm not entirely sure on that one. But you'd like to think that they have another plan because they need another tackle. They entered this season with really only DJ Fluker as the guy that could go ahead and swing out to tackle, which is why he probably didn't play so much as a guard. But they obviously don't have that option now. You've eliminated all that depth, or at least all that experience depth. You'd have to roll into somebody like Ben Bredesen, who could potentially take some snaps at tackle, maybe try to see a guy who played it in Pee Wee football or something like that and go, all right, there you go. That's not a situation Baltimore would like to be in. And I have to imagine they're going to sign someone in the next day or two simply just to get him in the building in time to maybe play not this coming up week, but the week after.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that, Matthew, you mentioned it, is Phillips has seemingly held on to this right guard job despite not promising play. You know, he is still a rookie, and Marshall Yanda, yes, for comparison, was not a Hall of Fame guard in his rookie year either. But if Patrick McCary comes in and plays really well, we saw Baltimore experiment with the kind of two-guard rotation when Phillips got injured in another game, and we saw Powers and McCary rotate. But that was in a game against what most people would say was a relatively inferior opponent to the Ravens. They're not going to have that luxury with the schedule they have coming up. This is the toughest stretch of their schedule, this five-game stretch that started with Pittsburgh. You have at Indianapolis, and you have games against the Titans and the Patriots, and then sandwiched in between another game with the Steelers on Thanksgiving. So Baltimore won't have that luxury, but if Phillips does return and McCary or Powers, whoever it is, does not impress, then maybe the Ravens decide to put Phillips right back in there. Our next question, Matthew, comes from Edwin, and Edwin asks, with 8 players possibly sitting out on Sunday, what are our odds looking like to win this game on Sunday?
Well, if you go to any of the odds makers right now, Baltimore's actually, weirdly enough, still has a positive point spread in their favor. And if you are seeing that and you are concerned about Baltimore being out now 7 guys because Matthew Judon returned to Thursday, if you are concerned about that, it might make sense for you to make a bet and go with the Colts and the points there. I mean, 2 points is 2 points the last time I saw. So, I'm kind of shocked odds makers actually put out odds at all, considering most of those guys are starters on this defense. If all 8 of them, again, now 7, were to be out, Baltimore would be in trouble. There's no which way or any other way to look at it. Baltimore would be in trouble defensively. You'd be missing, you know, your inside linebacker, you'd be missing a cornerback, you'd be missing a backup cornerback for that matter. A lot of concern there. So Hopefully it doesn't come down to that, but you know, I wouldn't give us the greatest odds if that does happen, is what I'll say. But as of right now, I'm going to knock on wood, everybody. As of right now, it looks like everybody is, you know, just a high risk scenario. Nobody's testing positive as of yet. So hopefully that continues to be the case, and Baltimore is able to get all those guys out there, minus Marlon Humphrey this week.
Yeah, I think so. If the Ravens have their players back from the reserve COVID list, they don't test positive throughout the week, they're back on Sunday, no practice definitely hurts. But at the end of the day, the Ravens, I think, would have won this game if they had Marlon Humphrey. Even without Humphrey and the player that he is, I think Baltimore is still equipped to win this game. But it will be up to, I think, the players who didn't practice this week, who haven't been with the team this week outside of virtual meetings. That's tough for some people. And we kind of had some coaches, Ravens coaches, allude to the fact that, look, some people go out there on Sunday with no practice and they dominate. But others, they don't dominate. So we'll see how that ends up going for the Ravens. But Matthew, our final question here, it comes from Chuck. And Chuck asks, what is the realistic expectations of Dez Bryant when he ends up suiting up and playing?
I think the best thing to look forward to Dez Bryant is he's just another target. If you expect nothing out of him and he catches a ball in a game, cool, then he's exceeded expectations. The reality of the situation is Baltimore brought him in, but they don't have to activate him from the practice squad. And if they were going to sign him to the 53-man roster, there would be no reason to add him to the practice squad to begin with in the slightest. So why add him to the practice squad is the big question. And that is, you know, there were some discussion about how his first workout might not have been great, or there might be some concerns about how he's going to be able to hold up both over the entire season and just how much he really still has left in the tank. You put him on the practice squad, you allow him to go ahead and run the scout team last week as a makeshift Chase Claypool, which is a good role for him. And then you just see how he does. Let's see, is he able to build up chemistry with Lamar Jackson? Does he have speed? Is he able to make crisp cuts? Does he make receptions? You know, those are the questions you kind of want to start to poke around, and you get a chance to get a longer look at him. But again, by no means is he a guarantee to ever play football for Baltimore on the field on a game. So again, I think the realistic expectations is expect nothing, and whatever you get out of him is fantastic. I know the hope is that he turns into a possession receiver, and you're able to kind of use him almost like an Anquan Boldin-esque type of guy. You know, hopefully he still has a little bit of deep speed to him. Maybe you can throw him out there on a play or two on a post or a go route or something. If you really want to, you know, confuse a defense, or you want to try to get one-on-one coverage and let Dez Bryant just beat the guy by being bigger. Hopefully that's the case. But you're really going to use him on those, like, you know, 7, 8, 10 yard outs. So that way he catches the ball, hits the sticks, done. That's his role. That, I think, would probably be a realistic expectation for him if he does eventually make it to the 53-man roster to begin with.
And if he does end up making it there, Matthew, I think you have to look at it as something where he's not expected to go in there and have 10 catches, 150 yeah. yards, two scores, right? He's coming in there to be a third, fourth, even fifth option in the passing game at first. Maybe he plays lights out and he kind of goes up in that pecking order. There's no doubt Bryant was a star in Dallas. You know, he had so many great years there. But right now, where he is in his career, he's over 30. Baltimore's receivers and against Pittsburgh last week, they had what I think is a really good showing and something that I was encouraged by guys like Miles Boykin and Willie Snead, guys who we've been asking to step up for weeks now. So Bryant maybe comes in and is a luxury to position Baltimore might not have expected to have a luxury in. But at the end of the day, Dez Bryant, yes, you're right, Matthew. The whole point of this was to bring him in and see how he looks. And apparently, from what we've been hearing and what the Ravens have been saying, and maybe it's some coach speak in there too, but he's looked pretty good so far, really good. Dez Bryant has had a lot of good things said about him by John Harbaugh. Lamar Jackson has praised him. There have been a lot of good things coming out of Baltimore about Dez Bryant. But your point, Matthew, it's a wait-and-see approach. Expect nothing, and whatever you get, hey, you'll take it right there. But we'll head into our first break now, and when we get back, we'll be talking about the Ravens matchup with the Colts in Week 9, starting with the Ravens offense versus the Colts defense. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day. No matter how you watch this season, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. Locked On Ravens is back here with our second segment of our Purple Friday episode. Kevin Ostreicher is still here with Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire. And Matthew, this game against the Colts, honestly, it's a little bit bigger than I anticipated in terms of maybe just what's at stake here. So I want to start there. How big is this game for Baltimore, and what is at stake for this team, even if it's not necessarily a playoff spot or an AFC North title? What is at stake for Baltimore in this game?
Well, you know, to give you the classic coach speak, it's one game at a time. You just, you're 0-0 right now. You hope to be 1-0 by Sunday evening. So from that standpoint, it means a lot. Every game in a 16-game season means a lot to every team. So winning is important. This week, it's probably a little bit more important because, A, the Indianapolis Colts are also going to be fighting for a wild card spot, or at least the top of their division. So a very important game on that front. If you want to go ahead and work out seeding eventually, winning this game will matter there. It could determine a playoff spot for sure. If Baltimore skips out in a few games, doesn't do all that well in a few spots, they very well could need that game against a playoff caliber opponent in order to get themselves into the playoffs. So that's important. And in addition to that, it's, you know, it's the first game after Stanley, after Marlon Humphrey's out. You're really going to get a good chance to look at what this team has depth-wise. And certainly if Baltimore is going to go ahead and go to the Super Bowl, they're going to need to do it without Ronnie Stanley. It's the first game, granted. So there's going to be some hiccups. There's going to be some bugs. It's not going to be outstanding play. If it is, then maybe be a little concerned about how bad the Colts actually are. But it's the first game you get a chance to see what this offense can possibly do without Stanley. Are they going to be able to run the ball effectively? They certainly were last week against Pittsburgh, a Steelers team that was, you know, loading up the box in an effort to really stop the run and was still getting steamrolled there. Are you able to do that effectively? How does left tackle do in terms of pass blocking? How does DJ Fluker do on the other side as far as a pass blocker? Is Lamar getting more time, less time? Is he feeling that pressure in some instances we've seen it this year? Is he feeling that pressure well before it's ever there? If that starts happening, you start seeing sloppy Lamar. You start seeing some issues prop up there. So a lot of questions are going to be answered in this game. And as you mentioned, Kevin, this is a tough slate. You've got Indianapolis. You've got New England. While they're not doing well, I refuse to ever rule them out. You got the Tennessee Titans and the Pittsburgh Steelers. So you've got, you know, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 games against not only winning teams, but winning playoff caliber teams in 5 weeks. This is just smack dab in the middle of it. And it's a great test for Baltimore to really find out, can they go ahead and live without their stars?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a game that I think a lot of people might have written off the Colts early in the year, you know, old Phillip Rivers, a defense that had been underperforming for a few years. This Colts team is really good. Part of the reason they're 5-2 is a lot of the reason why the Ravens are 5-2. These are two good football teams, but for the Ravens, without Ronnie Stanley, without Marlon Humphrey, this game is important. It could have very big implications down the line. And again, you're right. Every game, you're 0-0. You want to go out of the week 1-0. But this is still going to be a really important game for Baltimore regardless. But Matthew, you kind of mentioned Lamar Jackson, what it takes for Lamar Jackson to be elite Lamar, and then what you called sloppy Lamar. So what does Lamar Jackson have to do in this game to become elite Lamar? And what would have to happen, as you kind of talked about earlier, for him to kind of go down back to sloppy Lamar?
I mean, at this point, I'd be happy with game managing Lamar. And that's what he wasn't last week. And it, had he been you know, rookie season Joe Flacco, where just don't turn it over, don't make any dumb throws, and just sit there, you'll be fine. We'd win that game. This week, you know, I want baby steps. He doesn't need to turn into an MVP candidate overnight. I don't expect that. Anyone expecting that is asking way too much of a guy in his third year, his second year starting. I just want to see him make smart throws. I want to see when it's not there, when he's feeling the pressure, you know, maybe try to extend the play if at all possible. If you can't extend the play, you know, chuck the ball out of bounds, man. See if you can't hit a kid in the stands or something. Don't try to go ahead and force the ball into triple coverage or stare down a wide receiver and then throw it with the cornerback just baiting you to go ahead and jump that route. Don't do things like that. Don't fumble the football. Don't knock it out as you're running up the field. It's not asking a lot right now, but it's important. It's important that he just kind of settles down in this game and just let the run defense, the rushing attack go ahead and gouge Indianapolis like it did against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you'll do just fine. This defense is more than capable of handling Phillip Rivers. The offense, as long as the run game is able to get running, and obviously it did with Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins, you don't need an MVP game from Lamar Jackson. You just need him not to screw it up, really.
Yeah, exactly. And Matthew, we know Lamar Jackson. He's a playmaker. He's electric. But sometimes it seems like, and this is for a lot of young quarterbacks, they sometimes try to do too much. And I'm not going to attribute him, quote unquote, trying to do too much to all of his mistakes throughout his entire career, because sometimes it is just learning, growing pains. And that's to be expected with a guy who you mentioned third year, second year fully starting in this league, which is a very tough and competitive league. And part of what I think Lamar Jackson needs to do is help establish that ground game, whether it be with his own legs or just, you know, maybe switching to some runs at the line. Now, we don't necessarily know how much freedom Lamar Jackson does have at the line, whether he reads something pre-snap and he's allowed to maybe audible out of a play. But if there is that tiny bit of freedom that Lamar Jackson has, or maybe even a little bit more, I'd like to see some of that from Lamar Jackson. You kind of mentioned game manager Lamar. Well, I think part of what goes into game managing, Matthew, is reading stuff at the line and saying, all right, they're stacking the box with eight guys here. Do we want to run this or do we want to throw it? And it's the same thing if they're kind of pressing off in soft coverage. Do you want to run the ball? Maybe you'll get a few, maybe 8 yards. But I think that's the better option than maybe throwing against that soft coverage. So Baltimore, I think if they give Lamar Jackson that freedom, it will help him grow more. Maybe there'll be a few mistakes here and there. But I think that's what, quote unquote, you know, game manager Lamar would do really, really well.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that one. And to kind of piggyback off your point real quick, Kevin, Lamar Jackson isn't a bad quarterback by any stretch of the imagination. We saw it last year. We've seen it at times this year. He just needs to be smarter with his decision making. And like you mentioned, Kevin, if the rushing lanes are there, don't try to force the ball down the field. Run. Don't, you know, you don't necessarily have to run right up the middle. You can go ahead and use the sideline as your friend. You can play smart football in that way, but certainly stop trying to be Drew Brees. You're not Drew Brees. That's not what makes you special. Stop trying to be that guy.
Yeah, and you know, it takes a while for guys to become a Drew Brees, an Aaron Rodgers, a Tom Brady. And even then, Lamar Jackson has a very special skill set. And, you know, that's a skill set that Drew Brees doesn't have. That's a skill set that Tom Brady doesn't have. But at the same time, Lamar Jackson doesn't have some of the skills that those quarterbacks have. So it's all a matter of, all right, how do I play to my strengths? How do I analyze this defense? It all goes hand in hand. Football is a sport where you can tie everything back to something else. And tying this back to the run game, Matthew, we saw last week without Mark Ingram in the fold for Baltimore, Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins, and Lamar Jackson as well, they dominated a very stout Pittsburgh front four, a very elite Pittsburgh defense. J.K. Dobbins went over 100 yards for the first time in his NFL career. So, Matthew, with Mark Ingram expected to be out again, he has not practiced all week. How do you think the Ravens split up their carries this week? Do you think we see kind of a pretty even split between Dobbins and Edwards? Or do you think maybe it leans in one running back's direction, maybe some Justice Hill? What are your thoughts?
Hard to complain about the split if you're any of those three guys. No one really got more than the others. I would kind of expect that to continue. You know, you don't have three running backs this time. You don't have to go ahead and try to work Mark Ingram in there as well and try to give him maybe 10 carries compared to like 8-8 or anything like that. You just get to, again, just you get to be smarter with how you do those things if you're Greg Roman with only two running backs. And both those guys have dramatically different skill sets, and that's something we talked about, you know, prior to the season starting when I was not adamant, but very shocked at the idea of Baltimore keeping all the running backs they actually have. Gus Edwards, power guy. You get a chance to run right up the middle with him, and he can lower that shoulder, and he's quick to the hole. He's able to go ahead and make big things happen just by, you know, rolling over guys effectively. Dobbins, a little bit more quick. He's got that huge initial cut that he's able to make in the hole, and he's also got the speed to go ahead and take it to the outside, and he's a good receiving option. So that's kind of what I would expect Baltimore to kind of use those guys as. You put Dobbins out there a little bit more on those third down situations as a dump off running back potentially this week. Hopefully that's the case. And you use, you know, Gus Edwards is your first down guy, your short yardage guy. You use him in the way that he is best used.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what you need to do. And again, not necessarily forcing anything when it comes to the ground game. Now, the Ravens, what should be their MO is the ground and pound offense. We saw it work against the Steelers, and it was kind of this thing of, all right, well, Baltimore's absolutely bludgeoning Pittsburgh on the ground. Then they kind of got pass happy in some instances, and it backfired, so they went back to the ground game, and it worked. So hopefully, if there was any positive to take away from the Ravens' loss against the Steelers, I think that it should be that the Ravens might have learned that this offense, regardless of how badly Greg Roman or Lamar Jackson or John Harbaugh or anyone wants this to be a passing offense, it all starts with the run game. And even without Mark Ingram in there, someone who was such an instrumental part of Baltimore's success in 2019, both on the ground and in the air, he was a threat receiving the football as well. You mentioned kind of using J.K. Dobbins in that check down receiver role. Dobbins is somebody who is a weapon. He is somebody who is a threat in all facets of the offensive game. So for the Ravens, it will be key for them to establish their dominance on the ground. And even if it starts off slow, you know, you can't abandon it in the middle of the second quarter, the start of the third, if you're down. This team should run the football from start to finish, regardless of the score, unless it's like the Ravens are down 28 points with 10 minutes to go in the fourth. Then I understand. But the Ravens' rushing offense is so good. It absolutely wears down defenses. It controls the clock. Everything you want from this Baltimore offense. And in turn, it opens up the pass game for Lamar Jackson to be a successful throwing quarterback, because that's what he is. He's a successful thrower. He has all the tools to do it. He's a successful runner. He has all the tools to do that as well. So I think the ground game for Baltimore is going to be key here. But we're going to head into our final break, and when we return, we'll be talking about the Ravens defense going up against that Colts offense led by Phillip Rivers. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to our final segment of this Locked On Ravens Purple Friday edition here. Kevin Ostreicher with you, and here with me is still Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire. And Matthew, looking at this Ravens defense, very depleted from a practice perspective, but hopefully, as we kind of talked about earlier in the show, these guys will be able to come back and play who are on the COVID reserve list. Obviously, Marlon Humphrey not among them. But Matthew, I want to start off with this Ravens pass rush. Obviously, we saw Yannick Ngakoue get in on the game for the Ravens. He played a significant amount of snaps, especially after Matthew Judon was ejected in the second quarter. Looking ahead to Indianapolis, this Colts offense is much like the Steelers offense in terms of their quick hitting ability. Pittsburgh, I think Ben Roethlisberger ranked first in getting the ball out in terms of time with the football. He gets that ball out quickly. Phillip Rivers the same way. I believe he ranked sixth in time from getting the football to actually releasing it. So we saw a little bit of what Pittsburgh did in their quick hitting, no huddle offense to kind of get the Ravens pass rush and make them irrelevant. So do you think we might see a little bit more of that from the Colts on Sunday?
Absolutely. I mean, that I think is the best way to attack this Baltimore Ravens defense. A, they're super aggressive just because that's who they are. And typically when you want to go ahead and beat that, either you run right at where blitzes are going. Certainly if Baltimore is blitzing a defensive back, that's the guy I'd want to run my big bodied back into. And as well, you get the ball out fast. You go ahead and hit on quick slants. You attack the middle of the field. Those things are typically more open when a team is as blitz heavy as Baltimore is. Now, some of that is going to be interesting because with Ngakoue in here, who knows? Maybe Baltimore isn't nearly as blitz heavy as they, you know, were earlier in the season. Maybe they're able to go ahead and send more of a four-man rusher, only send an additional guy instead of having to blitz two or three at times. So, but still, at the same time, if you're Indianapolis, take advantage of your quarterback in Phillip Rivers. Get the ball out quick. Don't let him get hit, because when he gets hit, Phillip Rivers is not great. And I think they figured that out pretty quickly over there in Indianapolis. So, that's the plan of attack that I would have if I'm Indianapolis.
Yeah, we saw Pittsburgh kind of do a little bit with stacks. We saw Pittsburgh stack three wide receivers on the right side. Maybe they would do two and two, two on the left, two on the right. I think NFL defenses haven't really been able to figure out stacks and how to really cover it. You can do a lot in stacks. You can run pick plays. You can do a lot of outside concepts, slant concepts. There are a ton of things you can do off those stacks, and Baltimore seemed to struggle defending those. We saw multiple times Juju Smith-Schuster get open on some slants and stuff just based off of stack plays. So if you attack this Ravens defense quickly, I think, again, Matthew, I agree, that's the best way to do it. But part of it, Matthew, I think might have to do with this Ravens depleted secondary, as we've talked about here before earlier in the show. The Ravens, they'll be relying on guys like Marcus Peters and Jimmy Smith to step up in a big way without Marlon Humphrey in there. But then it's other guys, too. It's Khalil Dorsey. It's Terrell Bonds if he gets called up again. It's Nate Harrison if he gets called up again. So, Matthew, what are the Ravens going to do on Sunday in their secondary?
Well, I think the first thing that you need to do is you want to get after the quarterback, as I kind of alluded to there at the end there. When you're hitting Phillip Rivers, as I look at his stats, the games in which he's had multiple turnovers, multiple interceptions, he's been pressured far more often. The games where he's been given time, he is able to pick apart a defense. So if you're Baltimore's secondary, you want to get hands on a wide receiver at the start. That helps take out those quick slants. It helps, you know, a guy from getting deep on you if you can get good hands on him. And it just allows you to do a little bit more with your pass rush. So if I'm Baltimore, I want to press. I want to use our big guys. There's a lot of big cornerbacks in Baltimore's depth chart. You can use those guys to be a little bit more physical at the line of scrimmage. It does necessarily open you up to things like pick plays and stuff like that, but the Colts can't run that all night long, basically. So that's what I would want to do. I'd want to get hands on wide receivers at the line of scrimmage. I want to bully them all night long. I want someone chirping at Marcus Peters at halftime about how angry they are they don't have a reception. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I think that's what Baltimore has to do as well, Matthew. I think that's their best bet all season. Obviously, there are some pass concepts that don't allow you to press. But in Baltimore's aggressive blitz concept defense, I think getting hands on the receivers, as you mentioned, is a great way to slow down this Indianapolis Colts offense. But Matthew, finally, I want to talk to you about some final score predictions for this game. This is a game that, again, I think is going to be super, super close. I think losing Ronnie Stanley and Marlon Humphrey does hurt this Ravens team quite a bit. I mean, obviously it does. They're two stars. How do you see this one going?
You know, it's going to be interesting to see who returns for Baltimore and who doesn't potentially. I'm going to go off the assumption that everyone but Marlon Humphrey is going to be active for this one. I don't know, man. I have a strange feeling if Baltimore is going to lean on the run offensively, they're going to let their offensive linemen kind of get into a rhythm just by, again, telling them, take this guy and put him into the stands. Let's see if we can buy him a hot dog every single play. If you do that run on the ground, you're going to be successful as an offense. Defensively, again, I think you just get a chance to be physical with Indianapolis. You get hands on wide receivers. You get after Phillip Rivers. You force him, just like you did with Ben Roethlisberger last week. You force him to make quick reads. If you take away those quick reads by jamming him at the line of scrimmage, he's going to have to look elsewhere and either throw the ball away or eat a sack. And Ben Roethlisberger got beat up last week by this defense. So I would not expect anything different for Phillip Rivers. The only problem is Phillip Rivers, maybe not necessarily as used to it as Ben Roethlisberger is. He might make some more mistakes. You might see him go ahead and make a last second throw that is ill-advised. And with a secondary, certainly capable of going ahead and do big things. So I'm predicting big things for Baltimore. I'm going to say it's 32-12 in favor of the Ravens.
Bold final score predictions. We have bold predictions and final score predictions all wrapped up into one right there. I love it. I think it's going to be a lot closer. I'm confident in this Baltimore team, but with no practice for these defensive players who were on the reserve COVID list, with no Marlon Humphrey, obviously seeing how the Ravens offense reacts to having a full game with no Ronnie Stanley in there. So it's Orlando Brown Jr. on the left side and DJ Fluker on the right. I think the keys to this game for the Ravens are to run the football effectively, to force Phillip Rivers into becoming a mistake-prone quarterback. You kind of talked about it there, Matthew. Phillip Rivers, I think, is a lot more mistake-prone than Ben Roethlisberger, than a lot of the other quarterbacks in the NFL. It's just a matter of getting him there. We've seen Phillip Rivers have bad games, and when they're bad, they're bad. They're bad, bad games. And if Baltimore's defense, if Baltimore can get pressure on the quarterback first, like you said, force him into those bad throws, it'll be a great day for Baltimore. But I do think there will be a little bit of a drop-off in performance just because of how the week has gone for the Ravens, and especially on the defensive side of the ball, where the Colts, they might not have star power names. It's not guys who the casual NFL fan would know. But they have guys up and down that 53-man roster that can perform at a very high level. And at the end of the day, Matthew, I think the Ravens win this game because it is a 53-man sport. Yes, Ronnie Stanley, Marlon Humphrey, those losses hurt. But if those guys come back from the reserve COVID list, I agree with you. I think they all have to come back for this prediction to be true for me. But I think it's going to be a 31-30 Baltimore victory by the narrowest of margins. And look, if it's by 1 point, if it's by 30 points, a win is a win. And I will take that for Baltimore 10 times out of 10. But Matthew, that's all that I have for you today. Thanks so much for coming on the show here. And hopefully Baltimore's back in the win column. So by the time we talk next week, it'll be a little bit better for the Ravens.
Absolutely, man. Hopefully we're sitting here going, all right, the Ravens are back officially. They did exactly what they needed to do. They played a complete game on all sides of the football for all 60 minutes. That'd be great to hear.
Oh, so yeah, definitely. And that is the goal week in and week out. Do what you're supposed to do, secure the victory, and take it 1 week at a time. But that's all we have for you today here this week on Locked On Ravens. We'll be back here on Monday after a two-day hiatus talking about the end result of the Ravens and Colts game. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you on Monday.